Okay. With that, I'll go ahead and call the February 28th, 2022 Water Board meeting to order. Heather, can you start with a roll call?
Sure. Todd Williams.
Here.
Allison Gould.
Here.
Tom Duster.
Here.
Scott Holwick. Here. Roger Lang.
Here.
Ken Houston. Wes Lowry?
Here.
Kevin Bowden?
Here.
Francie Jaffe? What a call that she's on.
Here.
Okay, there she is. Jason Elkins?
Here.
David Bell?
Here.
And Heather McIntyre is here. Chair, you have a quorum.
Great. Thank you, Heather. Item three is approval of the previous month's minutes. Are there any kind of questions, comments on the January 24th, 2022 meeting minutes? I'm not seeing any. If there are none, we need a motion to approve those minutes.
So moved.
Roger moves approval. Is there a second?
So moved.
Scott, I could barely hear you there.
Second.
Okay, I think I heard that as a second by Scott. Any further discussion? I'm not seeing any. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? All right, those are approved. Item number four is the water status report.
Yes, Chairman. The flow of the St. Vrain at Lyons today is 12 CFS with 125-year historic average of 15 CFS. Calling the St. Vrain Creek is Highland Reservoir number 2, admin 11,642, with a priority date of November 15th, 1881. The call on the main stem of the South Platte River is Pruitt Reservoir, admin 53,300, with a priority date of December 6, 1995. Ralph Price Reservoir is at an elevation of 6,371.9 feet, down 5,500 acre feet and releasing 23 CFS. Union Reservoir is at an elevation of 25.5 feet, down 2,000 acre feet and releasing 6 CFS. Statewide snowpack is at 95%. South Platte River Basin snowpack is at 99%, as is the Upper Colorado Basin. And St. Vrain Basin snowpack is at 129% of average. Local reservoir storage is at 65% full, and CBT storage is at 70% full. And then additionally, I wanted to share with you that the 2021 water treatment plant demands were just under 17,000 acre feet and nearly equal to the 20-year average. So that's all I have, unless you have some questions.
All right. Are there any questions for Wes on the status water status report? I'm not seeing any. Thank you, Wes. Heather, I asked you earlier, but is there any public invited to be heard, or I guess, Ken, any special presentations?
You don't have any public invited to be heard.
Okay. Ken, is there any agenda revisions or submission of documents?
I have none.
Okay. With that, we're on to development activity. Wes, are you handling that today?
Yes. The first item before you, item 7A, the Notch 66 by Watermark final plat. That's a 27.747 acre parcel located north of Highway 66 and west of the Burlington Northern Santa Fe Railroad. All historic water rights were transferred at time of annexation. The full 27.747 acres are subject to the full requirements of the raw water policy. Notch 66 by Watermark final plat will be in compliance with the raw water requirement policy upon satisfaction of the 40.428 acre foot deficit at time of final plat approval. Additionally, I would mention that this is slated for about a 336 multifamily unit development So it includes about 23 buildings, and then there's 10 other, I think, three-story buildings. And the plan is for that, it's going to be satisfied with cash in lieu. And that cash in lieu payment will be prior to the change in the fee expected on March 8th.
Okay. Are there any questions on the Notch 66 proposal on the water requirement? If not, Wes, we need to get a recommendation for approval to the city council. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. So unless there's any questions, does one of the board members want to make a recommendation of the Notch 66 project? Anyone?
So moved, yeah.
So Tom made the recommendation. Allison, you want to do the second?
Yes, please.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. Any further discussion? I'm not seeing any. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Okay. That one is recommended for approval by the council. Wes, you want to go on to the next?
Yes, the next item 7B, Bacon Subdivision Replat B, which is a 0.44 acre parcel located north of Donovan Drive and west of Sunset Street. There were no historic water rights pertinent to this particular property. The full 0.44 acres are subject to the full requirements of the raw water policy. Bacon Subdivision Replat B will be in compliance with the raw water requirement policy upon satisfaction of the 1.32 acre foot deficit at time of final plat or of platting. This is a subdivision of a existing lot into three lots. And this one also, we're expecting to see a payment for cash in lieu prior to March 8th.
Okay. Are there any questions on the Bacon Subdivision Replat B for Wes? Yeah, go ahead, Tom.
Yeah, so this is more like a general question, perhaps. Maybe I should have asked it on the last one as well, but I'm just curious as to whether whether the city's had any interactions with kind of individuals or you know, entities of some variety that we know are kind of in the pipeline about the new cash in lieu policy, and whether kind of what the reaction has been to that, and whether people are kind of expediting their processes to try to get in before that March 8th deadline, or just kind of any insights into that at all.
So yes, I've had a lot of conversations with a lot of different developers that are in the development process. I've had conversations with developers that aren't yet even in the development process that are thinking about getting into the process. So as you may recall, the raw water requirement policy affords any land that was annexed to satisfy all remaining deficits pertinent to that annexation at any time following annexation. So for example, you might have a 100 acre annexation, and then maybe you've had three separate 10 acre plattings, which gives a remaining 70 acres. And even though there may not be a plat as part of the existing 70 acres, anyone can go in there and satisfy that full remaining 70 acres. That doesn't normally occur, but we're seeing that occur now as a result of the upcoming increase for fee for cash in lieu. Sometimes historic water rights are nearly sufficient to satisfy the full 3 acre fee per acre deficit. And I've had experience where the owner of the property has satisfied the full 3 acre fee just to be done with it. It made it easier for him to market, to know that it was all done, and he locked in his cash in lieu. So basically the reaction has been very supportive. They've been appreciative that we've been doing our best to try to let them know above and beyond what's already been out there in the public. We're seeing quite a bit of, as you mentioned, expedited satisfaction. I think in the last 2 weeks, I've processed about $830,000 in cash and lieu payments. We're expecting more to be coming in the next week. And so none of that's really that surprising, but overall, I think it's been people that have, I guess, waiting. So typically what developers we find, one of the last things they'll do as part of their subdivision or platting process is to satisfy raw water deficits. And that happens for a number of reasons. One is if they were to transfer non-historic water rights as allowed by the policy, if they get transferred to Longmont, they can't be transferred back out. They can't be sold without a vote of the people. And so it's just naturally where most people want to be sure it's the last thing that they do. And so sometimes people will have their plat nearly finished, but for whatever reason, they're not ready to make that final step. And it can sit in the DRC process for months, if not years. And I think there's about a 2-year maximum limit, but we're finding that there are some of those individuals as well that are coming through right now and satisfying their deficits. They were identified last year by Water Board as their deficit. And now with the knowledge they've been given, they're coming in and satisfying their deficits. So hopefully that answers your question.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
Are there any other questions for Wes on the Bacon water analysis? And welcome, Marcia. Welcome to the meeting. So if there are no other questions, we need a recommendation of approval of the Bacon subdivision replat B water calculation to the council. Does someone want to make that motion? It looks like Allison is going to make the motion. Is there a second? Rogers the second. Any further discussion? I'm not seeing any. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Great. It carries. So is that all, Wes? That was the end of the development activity?
That was all.
Okay. Thank you. Is there anything under item 8, the general business? Ken's shaking his head, so no. On to item 9A is the annual Button Rock Preserve update. Welcome, Price. Good to see you. I assume you'll be the one kind of walking us through this.
Yep. And Heather, are you going to be running the PowerPoint for me, or do I do that? Looks like you are. Great. Welcome, everybody. Thanks for giving me the opportunity to update you all on happenings at Button Rock Preserve. My name is Price Hadley. For those of you who haven't met me before, I'm the Senior Watershed Ranger at Button Rock. We recently got satellite internet, so can everybody hear me okay? All right, good. That's a huge improvement. So next slide. So today I just wanna give you a quick overview of the past year at Button Rock, talk to you about the kind of the new normal that we're experiencing in the latter days of COVID, give you an update on ranger activity at the preserve, and then talk about forestry projects, some infrastructure and maintenance backlog that we've been working on, talk a little bit about visitor safety, and give you a preview of some outreach and education efforts that we're planning for the new year. Next slide. So unsurprisingly, COVID has continued to impact our management and our experience up here at Button Rock. As with the last, really the last 20 months or so, COVID has impacted the types of programs and activities we've been able to offer at Button Rock. The Boulder County Youth Corps season was canceled for the second year in a row. We've had infrastructure projects delayed due to supply chain issues, just like everything else. Every other aspect of city government, we've felt that pinch as well, which has required us to do some creative problem solving, and luckily we've found a way to get most of what we set out to do done in 2021. In the last year, we hosted over 58,000 visitors, which was 19% lower than 2020, but still busier than any year prior to COVID. On the chart on the right side of the slide, you can see there's the colors aren't great, but the brown line is our average from 2019 to 2021, and the gray line is 2021. So you can see that even in 2021, we still outpaced the prior average. We only exceeded visitation of 2020 in the fall, because in fall 2020, we obviously were experiencing the Calwood fire and had a closure. So overall, we've had less crowding in the preserve, which is nice. That's also led to fewer parking issues, fewer complaints from our residents in the Longmont Dam neighborhood, which is always a good sign, and generally pretty good compliance. Next slide. So part of that equation has definitely been an increase in ranger presence. We currently have 2 full-time rangers stationed at Button Rock and 1 seasonal ranger. You can see some photos of us in action on the right side of the slide. Overall, we've had good compliance relative to visitation. You know, as I said, we have about 60,000 visitors. Rangers patrol the preserve every day. We had more than 330 enforcement contacts. So anytime we're talking to somebody about a rules violation, gathering their information, that kind of thing. We're overall very educationally focused. We issued 310 warnings. We issued 1 summons, 20 parking tickets, which were really pretty much all took place right in the span of a couple of weeks. And then we were able to dial in some signage issues down at the parking lot and have had very few issues since, which is great. We checked over 195 fishing permits with fantastic compliance from our anglers. We made dozens of citizen assists, resident contacts, and naturalist kind of educational contacts, types of data that we track. Next slide. In addition to all that, rangers responded to 18 emergencies in the Button Rock area. Some notable calls included stranded hikers that we assisted across the river with help from Lions Fire in April during high water. In June, we had a ranger assist search and rescue in the sheriff's office with an evacuation of an injured equestrian in Colson Gulch, which is the Forest Service property to our west. We've had multiple search and rescues, including one where 3 missing hikers were found by a ranger. You can see the photo on the right from a small wildfire that myself and our seasonal ranger, Connor O'Reilly, were able to contain that we had located in Colson Gulch, again, just outside our west boundary. And we conducted a park evacuation of public, of visitors, during the Kruger Rock fire. Next slide. So in 2021, despite COVID, we were able to make some headway on a number of projects, including forestry work, maintenance, infrastructure, some visitor safety initiatives, and outreach and education efforts. Next slide. So forestry, obviously a big part of our job as watershed rangers is implementing the 2017 Forest Stewardship Plan. In 2021, we wrapped up the Logjam project, which was a forest restoration and fuels reduction cut on the west side of the property. We removed about 500 trees through a contractor. I was able to give 300 of those trees to Boulder County to use in the aerial mulching efforts on Calwood Burn Scar, which was kind of a cool way to use that carbon close to us for a good restoration purpose. We followed up that project with volunteer seed collection on the preserve to collect native seeds. And then we spread those seeds in disturbed areas in the logjam area. We're currently in the planning phase for another grant-funded forestry project like Logjam. We secured a fir worm grant from the state. And I'm currently working with Boulder County on a cross-boundary forestry treatment that'll take place in the Sleepy Lion Trail area, calling it the Antelope Park Project. So in order to do that cross-boundary work, we have to get a formal access agreement in place, do the RFP process to secure a contractor. So I'm currently working through the kind of intergovernmental planning that's required to pull something off like that. Related to all this is the city's continued involvement in the St. Vrain Forest Health Partnership, which is an intergovernmental, kind of interdisciplinary coalition of agencies, nonprofits, community groups, citizens, that to help protect the St. Vrain watershed and improve forest health. The city recently contributed $134,000 to Calwood fire recovery efforts, which was the matching amount with the St. Vrain Left-Hand Water Conservancy District. So we each contribute equal parts to pay for that effort in protecting and improving the burned area. Button Rock also was the site of a field trip from the St. Vrain Forest Health Partnership, where they toured our property and basically discussed forestry best management practices and desired future outcomes. And all of that is super valuable as it informs planning for projects like the Antelope Park cut. You can see in the picture on the right is the logjam cut that was last spring. You can see some piles there and what the area looks like after it's thinned. In our financial table, there you go, there's the picture. And on the financial table, you can see that we continue to effectively leverage grant funding to complete forestry work on the preserve. Since forestry efforts were started, since they were tracked in 2004, we've treated about one third the land mass of Button Rock. And we've done that with about 50% of the cost being covered by grant dollars. So very effective leveraging of grants. And we're continuing that into the future with the Antelope Park grant and additional grants being considered. Next slide. So Antelope Park project. You can see on this map, on our planning map here, we've got four units. There's three turquoise polygons and a yellow polygon on there. Just to give you a visual of where we'll be working in the new year. This cut is going to be focused on reducing meadow encroachment around Sleepy Lion Trail, reducing the basal area, the thickness of the forest on our boundary with Paul Ranch to really get to the point where it's a more natural distribution of age class of trees and also forest composition that will hopefully keep fire on the ground if a wildfire did come through the area, as opposed to, you know, the catastrophic crown fires that you've seen in the media or in person. And we're working closely with our partners at Boulder County Parks and Open Space to accomplish that, as well as with Left Hand Watershed Center. We'll be conducting an outreach and education campaign kicking off in about a month to really front load and educate our visitors about why we are doing this thinning and how it helps protect the forest and most importantly, protect our drinking water. Next slide. So we've been dealing with a bit of a maintenance backlog at Button Rock. COVID hasn't really helped that, but luckily, we've had a lot of support from the city and increased staffing at the preserve. We've been able to really make some headway. I was able to apply funds that had been intended for Boulder County Youth Corps when that season was canceled to address some of these maintenance issues. If you click once, it should switch. So this is Button Rock Dam before our backlog of maintenance was addressed. And this is what it looks like after a haircut. Obviously, we, you know, try to keep our infrastructure, you know, clear of woody vegetation, prevent any damage to it. So that was one large project that we worked on, was clearing all woody vegetation from the dam face to protect that structure. We also treated invasive species along our main fire road, removed some hazmat that we'd found in different structures on the preserve. We've worked to establish defensible space around preserve facilities, and I drafted a facilities management plan to make sure that a lot of these issues don't end up on the back burner and we continue to be proactive and taking care of them. And last, I'll just point out that we recently towed and removed the debris boom from Ralph Price Reservoir, that for those of you who are involved in water board will remember that was placed there after the 2013 flood. So that was no small effort, but we've got that debris boom off the water and we've salvaged it and stored it at Nelson Flanders. So if we need to redeploy it in the future, we can. Next slide. So as part of our maintenance backlog, we've worked to maintain and protect our infrastructure so that they're sustainable going forward. We addressed a variety of unsafe conditions in the Ranger residence and in the Ranger station, including radon, asbestos, and bolt structures, and a lack of water and heat in the Ranger residence, which we've now corrected and much more livable. Ranger Miles Churchill is living currently at the preserve. We converted the lower Ranger residence, which some of you may be familiar with down here by the spillway, to a functioning Ranger station. So we now have access to bathroom, heat, you know, internet, those basic necessities for doing our work on site. We upgraded a radio tower on the property, replaced the outlet tunnel vent fan, which had failed. It was original to the 1960s. Conducted a risk review with our risk department and assigned confined spaces. And we also, the Rangers operated pumps 24/7 during last CBT shutdown in 2021 in order to provide drinking water to the public. Next slide. In addition to kind of the infrastructure, the built environment, we also worked on improving visitor safety. We published the new Button Rock Dam EAP, Emergency Action Plan. We upgraded our public safety radio system for the Rangers. So now Rangers for the first time are able to talk to Longmont Dispatch directly, which is a huge asset to us. We improved our safety signage, including some signage around our outlet pool where the water comes out at the base of the dam. We dramatically improved our parking compliance with some additional signage, installed some pop-up parking signage when we've got high traffic days, removed hazard trees, worked with volunteers to close some social trails. You see the buck and rail fence in the upper right that people were going down this gully and getting stuck next to the creek, resulting in probably about a half dozen search and rescue missions over the span of a year. And we've not had a single issue since we built that fence. And we also invested in improved wildfire training and equipment for the Ranger crew. Next slide. Finally, just want to give you a little bit of info on some outreach and volunteer efforts that we've been doing at the preserve. The city recently hired a volunteer coordinator to help us stay organized and recruit volunteers. Even before she was hired, Taylor Gifford is our new volunteer coordinator. She's great. We had 12 volunteer workdays at the preserve, which accomplished social trail closure that I mentioned earlier, pulling, fencing, collecting native seeds, and picking up trash at McCall Lake. I worked with a translator and with our branding and marketing department to produce Spanish and English brochures that are stocked at the preserve and include a hiking map, as well as historical and natural history information about Button Rock area and regulation information. And we are working with the Left Hand Watershed Center to plan the forest health education campaign that I mentioned earlier. Next slide. So here's my requisite slide of critters from 2021 highlights. I've got our, I think technically this bobcat is from 2022, but a bobcat that I encountered at a distance of about 15 feet at the Button Rock Trailhead, who was eating a roadkill deer. So that was definitely a top wildlife experience of my time as a ranger. And then a black bear from the Chimney Rock area. So continues to be an excellent hidden gem up here at Button Rock, despite some a little bit more popularity. Next slide. So yeah, if you have any questions, I'm happy to speak to anything in the presentation or answer any questions you may have.
Great, thank you, Price. Looks like Allison has a question, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Price. Really love the pictures as always. Was that mountain lion also up there?
The mountain lion was, that photo was taken by a regular visitor to Button Rock who's a wildlife photographer, but that lion was actually at Rabbit Mountain. I was looking for a nearby lion photo for our pamphlet when it talks about the different animal species you may encounter. And Jane was was kind enough to offer us use of that photo. But yeah, she encountered that lion on the Eagle Wind Trail over in Boulder County open space.
That's awesome. Thank you. One topical question, where were those 300 trees processed?
So the 300 trees that were hauled off of the logjam cut were trucked to Heil, Heil Valley Ranch on Gear Canyon Road. And the county had a contractor there that was processing the wood on site, turning it into mulch, wood straw. And then they would load it into the helicopters and follow GPS and drop it on various prioritized units in the burn scar.
Cool. Thank you.
Are there other questions for Price? I do have one, Price. In terms of the, I guess, the overall drainage, how much, I know you're working on a lot of private lands. Is there quite a bit of public Forest Service lands as well that are ultimately would have be within the drainage of Ralph Price?
So the drainage, like expanding up to Allen's Park and Wild Basin, I mean, really you're kind of encapsulating everything from Rocky Mountain National Park through some limited private holdings up in the Allen's Park area as you cross Highway 7. But I mean, it's fairly limited what's upstream of us in terms of private property. I mean, we have the Park Service and then a large swath of Forest Service property in a Boulder County roadless area as you come in from Larimer, draining into Ralph Price. In the preserve, you know, it's 3,000 acres of city land surrounded by many thousands of acres of the Arapahoe Roosevelt National Forest. We border two large holdings from Boulder County Parks and Open Space, primarily the Hall Ranch and Riverside Open Space, as well as many other smaller parcels. And then we've got about, I think, 9 private properties. So it's predominantly public land, which is definitely an asset to us when we look at landscape scale planning for forestry and watershed protection.
I guess the reason I asked, Price, is I know the Northern District is doing work on the East Troublesome Fire, and there has been, the Forest Service has been getting funds to do more, I think, forest management as well as obviously kind of mitigation from the East Troublesome Fire. So you guys have done an amazing job on the grants. I just didn't know if there'd be a way to maybe leverage some of that money coming to the Forest Service for maybe management projects, if there's areas of concern. So that was kind of the reason I was going there.
Yeah, there's a pot of money called, I think it's Adjacent Lands Treatments or something along those lines, that is open to local government, that I was talking recently with the State Forest Service about. So any of our parcels, which is, you know, any of our parcels that border Forest Service land that we're doing forestry work on could be eligible for those funds, which is virtually everything. And then there's also a large amount of state funding in COSWAP, the Colorado, I think it's Strategic Wildfire. I'm not sure what the full acronym is, but COSWAP is the distributing funds. Maybe Ken can speak to the full acronym, but we have that on our radar, both in terms of additional work we can do with youth corps. I've got a partnership that I'm working on with Larimer County Conservation Corps' Sawyer crew. It's a young adult Sawyers in probably in their 20s, college age. There's some state funding that I can get to offset those costs, as well as some larger grant dollars that we're looking at with in conjunction with partner agencies.
Okay, great. Well, you guys do an amazing job. So I was impressed on how much you're able to raise in terms of grant funding. So thanks for that. Any other questions or comments? I guess maybe the last question I've got is on, I know we had discussions on, I know you've mentioned the violations. Is that, assume that's going better since you guys had first enacted it? Can you give us an update on that?
So you're just talking about general code violations or?
Yeah, I think it was multiple dogs and they were off leash and resulting in waste issues and other problems.
I mean, I would say based on, you know, I've been a ranger for 7.5 years, and based on my experience in my previous park system, our compliance is much better here, much more polite and easy to work with population. I'd also say, knowing that Boulder County averages about an 80% compliance rate, you know, I'd say that we're at least something along those lines, which is great. You know, we have really good compliance with the one dog per visitor regulation that was implemented several years ago. You know, we have pretty good, could be better compliance with our leash law. That said, it has improved in the time that I've been here, with greater ranger presence, and, you know, we can further improve it through, you know, the use of ticketing if we have to. But I think that overall the compliance is very good compared to other, you know, open space or nature preserve type, you know, lands that you encounter throughout the state.
Great.
And our fishing compliance is excellent, which is great.
Good. Okay. Anything else for Price? I'm not saying anything. Thank you very much for the update. It's always fun to hear about all the work you guys are doing. You got a lot on your plate, so thank you.
Thank you.
So with that, we'll go on to item 9B, which is a water resource engineering projects update. Jason?
Hey, thank you. Yeah, I'd like to give everybody an update on some of our major capital projects. So the South St. Vrain Pipeline Rehab Project. I know I've been talking about that one in a lot of meetings lately. So we've issued a substantial completion for that. We've just got some punch list items that we have to do, but basically, you know, the South St. Vrain pipeline is going to be full, capable of delivering water to the Highland Ditch by the end of this week. We just have to remove some sediment deposits on the east end of the pipeline, by Friday, we should be able to actually deliver water if we needed to. Having said that, we probably won't be doing that because we're starting to kick off the South St. Vrain Pipeline pump station project. And so I just issued notice to proceed to Glacier Construction on that project last week. And they're currently starting to get prepared to mobilize. They've called in for locates. They're doing some preliminary surveying work. And they're planning on being on site at the end of this week, and they'll be kicking that off. And they actually anticipate being able to finish construction a few weeks ahead of what we had estimated. So I'm still working out some of the details on the construction schedule, but overall, we're fairly confident that we're going to have this pipeline up and running by summer. You know, June, July. It depends on a lot of things, but assuming everything goes according to plan and no unforeseen supply chain issues and stuff like that, knock on wood, which we don't anticipate, but we're anticipating having that pump station online, you know, in June, July timeframe. So the North St. Vrain pipeline feasibility study that we're doing with Dewberry Engineers. We've done the SES evaluation, that's the sustainability evaluation system. And so we had seven or eight participants in that from all different departments. We even had a lot of auditors, just people just kind of viewing, watching us go through the evaluation process. And so Francie Jaffe, actually, she was the facilitator for that one, and she led the team in that. And so we've finalized the report on that, and that SES tool will be, or the results of that SES tool will be incorporated into the study. And so we're anticipating having that study finalized in the next couple months. You know, we're getting pretty into the weeds now into the study. And so things are dragging out a little bit longer than anticipated. Having said that, quality over quantity. I'd rather, you know, spend a couple extra weeks going over some of these details with the fine tooth comb as opposed to try to rush them. So anyway, we hope to have that ready probably this spring. And as soon as I do have that in draft form, I'll forward it to the board for review and for comment as well. And then one of the projects that I inherited from Larry Wayno, he recently retired from engineering services. As part of our 1041 permit with Boulder County on the North St. Vrain Pipeline replacement project along Apple Valley Road, is there's two abandoned segments of North St. Vrain Pipeline still in the creek. It's not actually in the creek, it's below the creek, but they're crossing the creek. And as part of our 1041 permit, we're required to remove those two pieces of pipeline. And so anyway, I'm working with Nixcavating Construction and working with the adjacent property owners out there because access to those two abandoned pipes, two sections of abandoned pipe are from private residents. And so working with them to get access, working with the county to get a stormwater permit and floodplain permit and stuff like that. So just kind of jumping through some of the hoops now to get the permitting in place, but we're hoping to have that done before spring runoff. And to minimize the impact to those residents, the town of Lyons also has their water line that runs adjacent to ours, and they're also required to remove theirs. So being good neighbors and good stewards, just trying to help everybody out, we're going to remove the town of Lyons pipeline as well as part of our project so that the town doesn't have to come back in, you know, at a later date and disrupt, you know, those residents and damage their property. So it's double the workload, but it's not really a big deal. It's just a little bit more paperwork and a little bit more oversight. But the town of Lyons is participating financially while the city of Longmont leads in the construction and the design in that. So, but that's what I have for the board. Is there any questions?
Great, thank you, Jason. Any questions for Jason? I'm not seeing any. Thank you very much. Good update.
Thank you.
All right, we're on to item 9C, which is an update on council initiatives. Ken?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, we just have a few items that will affect over time the water board that I wanted to talk about. The first one is that council is still meeting remotely, but they're having conversations about when they'll go back to in person. And Marcia may be able to tell me better, but I believe like late March timeframe, early April at the latest.
I would think so, Ken. Yeah. I'm at a little bit of a disadvantage because we're not getting the case rates. You know, what we sort of voted on last time was we'd like to see it get down below the red level again. Remember those old levels that we used to have? And we've been so far above those. So I don't know where we are with respect to those old lines, but I think once we get down below them, we'll definitely go back in person if the council is even willing to wait that long.
Yeah.
Well, could be early March.
Okay. So in that vein, we didn't want to just arbitrarily say, okay, that, you know, we're going back in person on the water board. Just wanted to see if the board is interested in having a conversation today about either the March meeting or the April meeting, if you want to go back in person or continue remote. Just really kind of wanted to hear from the board on what your thoughts are.
Any comments from the board? I guess, oh, go ahead, Roger.
Ken, is there any criteria along with what Marcia was talking about as far as levels of activity or inactivity that would lead us one direction or another, or is it our decision to make by ourselves?
Well, at this point, it really is water board's decision because if you think about it, the real statistical kind of crunch point was when Boulder County removed the mask mandate for indoors. So that was kind of the last little thread out there hanging. But we didn't want to take that and run with it in February, even though it is now lifted. And so, yeah, it's you could certainly follow similar to what council's doing. You know, there was a low transmission level, we'll call it a medium yellow transmission level. And then there was a red transmission level. And last I looked, we were just kind of about to break below the top of the red transmission level. But I have to admit, I haven't looked the last week, but you know, that could be another criteria, but I would say technically it was when Boulder County lifted the mask mandate. And so either of those would be good criteria to use.
Yeah, one last comment, and you know, it's these work out pretty well remote, but I do miss getting together as a group live. So I would be in favor of doing it. You know, maybe we could target March, but anyway, that's just my opinion.
Thanks, Roger. Any other comments? I'm in line with Roger. If now that the mask mandate by Boulder County has been pulled, if we can get back in person, that'd be my preference. So that's just where I'm at. I don't know if Allison or Tom, if you guys want to weigh in on it, or Scott, if you can hear us.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, this is Scott. I can hear you fine, and I'm in favor of meeting live in person if possible.
Allison,
go ahead.
Sorry, I'm also of that opinion. At some point, we had discussed the ability to participate virtually if possible. I would like that to still be an option. If, for example, someone's feeling a little under the weather and they don't want to expose anyone, or if someone in their family is feeling under the weather, I think that that would be great to have that option.
Yes, as you may recall, we did, the board did change your board rules to allow that. So that wouldn't be a problem.
Perfect. Then I am in favor of going back in March.
Yeah, and Todd, I would also be in favor of going back in March. Seems like things are opening up a little bit, and so it makes sense. I will continue to be a mask wearer, so if everybody can put up with that, that's okay. But but other than that, yeah, I'd be happy to see you all in person again. So
great. Well, thanks everybody. Does that get you what you need, Ken?
Yes, it does. Thank you very much. And then again, if you can indulge staff, if something comes up. We none of us know. Some does come up. We may, on a case-by-case basis, switch back to a remote, and we'll let the board know that. But right now, we'll plan on in person beginning in March. So thank you very much. The second subject, and I'm only bringing this up to inform the board that we'll start this process, but because we have not had a chance to, it's going to take a little bit of work for staff to be ready to bring this forward to Water Board. But when we were taking some of our earlier cash and lieu information to council, the council had asked us to work with Water Board about the attainable housing, the possibility of having some attainable housing incentives relative to cash and lieu, similar to what we have for affordable housing and commercial incentive. So right now we have in the code language for commercial development incentive, and we have language in the code for affordable housing incentive. And council's been working more recently on attainable housing, which is a great area to look at as well. And so we've been asked to kind of look at how we do the other two programs and see if it fits in the attainable housing program and how we might implement it and how it might impact the other two programs, all those kind of things. So we have reached out to the planning department, and of course, the first thing I ask them is, give me a good definition of attainable housing. And they're working on that. I think there is some language in the code, but as I understand, they're working on that to better define what we want. And then of course, I would presume that's what we would use if we were to look at it from a water supply standpoint. But, and so yeah, Marcia, if you can add anything, that'd be great.
Yeah, well, the housing and urban development definition of attainable housing is that if a person or a family owning earning between 80% and 120% of the area median income can afford the mortgage, can qualify for the mortgage. It's attainable, which means essentially that there's none in Longmont right now. You know, that doesn't tell you a lot because the complication, the definition of area median income is also complicated. But, you know, in terms of, if you just think of that as average for a household that depends on the size of the household, then you're close.
So, yeah, as you can see, for us water folks, we're that's really getting out of our arena. But no, we want to you know, we want to start bringing that forward and start talking about that. And I will we'll be able in the future to be able to bring you more information exactly like that and start talking it through. And honestly, this is a slightly bigger area to wrap our hands around and figure out policy. And it certainly will require probably review and recommendations by Water Board, but then going to council and talking some of the policy issues and coming back. And, you know, I would expect we would refine it a number of times to get to wherever we're going to be. So we haven't even started working on it. So didn't want to, you know, overly complicate anything at this point, but just did want to, you know, throw it out there, let you think about it. It'll probably be something we'll be working at in the future, although not immediate future, because we want to work with our planning department to make sure we're compatible and understand where they're going with that as well. So just a heads up.
Yeah. Hey, Ken, I have a question. So
sure.
First of all, thank you for the update. I think this goes a ways at least towards addressing some of the things that I'd brought up in the past about maybe hopefully being able to use kind of, you know, our standing in terms of, you know, a pretty good water portfolio and a good standing, you know, to be able to do kind of positive change, you know, some kind of positive change here in the community. So I'm happy to kind of engage with this particular one. I think this is good. One piece of information that I may want and request very early on to so, you know, in the initial planning phases here, it would be helpful to know is maybe if you could, I don't know, somehow, I'm just thinking perhaps you could reach out to a developer or somebody that you know that you could ask a question to basically say, okay, well, you know, what percentage of a house or the housing, let's say housing, is kind of the water costs in some way that we could make a difference, right? So in other words, you know, can we help bring the cost of a house down by 1%, or can we help bring the cost of a house down by 0.00001%, right? Those are two big differences. So, and then kind of we could start brainstorming about ways that maybe we could help in that fashion, I guess. But
okay, yeah, we'd be happy to bring that. That I appreciate you letting us know you want that information, because certainly we understand the density. You know, we are developing slightly more densely, which is good, but that means the actual, when you spread the water over more units, it's less of an impact per unit. So yeah, we'll try to get that information as part of this.
Are there any other questions or comments on that? I do have a comment, Ken, but I'm going to wait until we get to the informational items. Just on the write-up overall that was presented to council, and just a couple of comments there. So
Okay. We
can keep moving along, and then I'll give you a few thoughts at that point.
Okay, and then I think Allison had her hand up.
Oh, I'm sorry. Allison, did you have some?
Yeah, kind of a similar to Tom's thoughts. One thing that we had discussed, and I apologize if this has been already kind of resolved, is how much area is actually still subject to this process. You know, is it 5 acres? Is it 250 acres? I mean, it would help us kind of understand what type of a spread we're looking at. So that would be one of the threshold questions that I would like to think about as a part of this question. And then as kind of a subset of that question, which one of, if any of these acres are actually zoned for residential and would be subject to the attainable housing categorization. So it would help kind of understand the scope of the issue as far as kind of what we're looking at, and then get into Tom's questions as far as like what would actually make an appreciable difference.
Okay, sure, absolutely. Yeah, we had similar, some a little bit of similar information in the cash and lease information, so we'll certainly plan on including that as well. That's a good point. We'll do.
Great. Thank you. Anything else?
Cool. Yes. The third thing I wanted to talk about real quickly was our schedule of water board meetings. Currently, we're scheduled the fourth Tuesday or fourth Monday of January and February, and then the third Monday, the remainder of the year. I believe council is taking up the possibility of having Juneteenth as a holiday. And I'm not sure if that'll be actually on Juneteenth day or if it's gonna be the third, it might be the third, I believe on the federal calendar, it's the third Monday. Usually gets ends up on Monday because then people have a 3-day weekend. So I don't know, Marsha, I might sorry to keep bugging you, but do you know where council is on I thought that might even be voted on next Tuesday, or is that coming up?
Tuesday is a study session and we voted on it. Is it a first reading already? I can't remember. There was no dissent. So whenever the vote happens, I'm pretty sure it'll be passed and it'll be a Monday holiday. But it's not this coming Tuesday because that's a study session.
Yeah, it's scheduled to come to you on the regular session at March 8th.
Thank you, Heather.
So basically what we were wondering is, you know, do you want to continue to kind of keep chipping away and having different Mondays? would you like us to look at maybe just going to the fourth Monday year round? What is easiest and best for water board? And there is no, you know, we don't need to make a decision today, but we will need to, you know, or we may want to consider it before June. And or we may want to consider in the next couple of months resetting the June meeting till the fourth meeting as we do in January and February. So staff is open to whatever water board wants to do. I just wanted to let you know that you know, might affect how you want to schedule your board meetings.
So. All right. Is there any kind of thoughts on that? It seems to me if you adjust it to the fourth, there's probably going to be conflicts there too. So at some point, maybe you stay with the third and then adjust as necessary. It would be kind of what my gut's telling me, but if anybody else has another idea, that's I'm open to that as well. Marsha, go ahead.
Yeah, I'll just say that the fourth Monday for me is beneficial electrification for quite a few months. And I don't know. I don't think anybody else is on that, but you know, I'm a secondary consideration, but I thought I'd let you know.
Okay. Any other comments? Roger?
I've kind of worked in on a third Monday schedule, and my preference would be to stay with it unless there's a reason to have an exception.
Okay.
During any one month. So that's just my preference.
Yeah. And I'm on the same page. Everybody else, is that okay for now for everybody? Okay.
Yes, Todd, this is Scott, and I'm in the same place as Roger. I've got this baked into my calendar for the third Monday.
So okay.
I prefer to keep it there, too.
Sounds good. All right. We'll go that direction then.
I was just going to say, I might add that that would be consistent with the board's bylaws. That's what you have stated in your regular meeting section of your bylaws, that it would be the third Monday. But in the event you can't meet on the third Monday, it would then go to the fourth Monday. So everything you guys have said would be consistent with your current bylaws.
Great. Thanks, Wes. Okay. Ken, anything else?
Then the last item is, as you may remember, we staff in our parks department has been working on a Button Rock Preserve master plan, a little more focused on the recreational and wildlife issues up there. They're still working on that plan, and they still plan on bringing back an actual master plan. And they had hoped to have it either for the February today or for the March meeting. Unfortunately, they don't have the actual master plan, the written document, done yet by the consultant. And so they've asked to postpone the meeting. Might be able to have it at the March meeting, but they can't guarantee us. So they were wondering if the water board would be amenable to having a special meeting called just for the purpose of looking at that master plan. And if it couldn't make it to the March meeting, it would probably be around the first week of April when that would happen. If they don't get it fairly soon, it'll probably be the actual April meeting, which actually turns out to be one day before they're scheduled to take it to City Council. They were just hoping to get it maybe a week before that so they could get any input back from the board and report that. But so I told them all I do is ask the board to see if you had any interest in having, you know, a special meeting in between the two regular meetings of March and April, or if you want to just wait and do that at the April board meeting.
Okay, any thoughts? I guess, Ken, my guys tell me if they get it done before the March meeting, would that be plenty of time? And even if they get it done in April, you'd still have a week before you'd have to go. You may not be able to include it in your write-up, but it seems like it could be part of the staff presentation, couldn't it?
Yeah, it could. We've done that before. We've had action taken on Monday, and then the next day at council, verbally report the board's action and input.
So that'd be my preference, to just include it with one of the board meetings, unless somebody wants to have a special meeting to discuss it. All right. I don't see anybody wanting to chime in beyond that. So I would just go that route. Ken, hopefully they can get it done. We can talk about it in March and have plenty of time. Otherwise, we'll visit about it in April.
Yeah, and they do know, I mean, even though the report isn't written, they do know the code changes that they're going to propose to council. And we do plan on bringing those code changes. So it's almost like we know the answer. We don't have the report, but we know the answers. And so I think we can still bring those to water board at the March meeting, so you have a feel for what those will look like. We just won't have the document to back it up. And we'll tell you what the backup is, though.
Okay, great. Thank you.
That's all I have.
All right, so we're done with nine. We're on to item 10, items from the board. We have the review of the major project listings and items tentatively scheduled for future board meetings. Any comments by the board on any of those items? I don't see any. Item 11, which is the information items and water board correspondence, any comments there? As I mentioned earlier, I do have one comment on the write-up that was in the packet related to the cash and lieu. First off, I thought you guys did a really good job of it. It was very thorough, and I thought you did a good job. The comment I'd make, though, is in the write-up, it's still written as if the Piesco trade, whether or not that could be made permanent or not is a question. And Ken, I believe that at our last meeting, you said that they cannot do that. They cannot make that a permanent trade. Is that correct?
That is correct. Yeah. And if we weren't clear on that, I apologize for that.
I think you were clear. It's just not in the council communication. It's still in there as a question.
Okay.
And I think it needs to be clear that that's not going to be a permanent agreement with the input you got from Piesco. And the reason I bring that up is I think that kind of frames, you know, part of the question of how much water does Longmont need to develop. If that's not going to be permanent, in my mind, that should not be part of Longmont's, you know, firm yield analysis as a water supply, because I don't think you can rely on that permanently. So where that leads me to is then in the write-up, you talk about Union Reservoir pump back update, when you get project firm yield analysis. I think that's all really good information that in the write-up, it said that'll come back in 2022. I'm just kind of framing it that as we compare supply and demand, I think you need to, you know, take maybe Piesco yield out, and then we need to look at the Union Reservoir pump back project in the two forms, as well as the Windy Gap firming project and any update you get from Northern on yield into account as we're comparing supply and demand. And then the last item that I'm going to tie into Tom's comment is, you know, whether it's affordable housing and commercial, you know, incentives or attainable housing, anything we're doing in terms of incentives is going to impact that supply side. So I just want to frame it as this analysis comes back, we're going to have to look at both supply and demand. And compare all those to make sure we're, you know, understanding the overall impact in terms of making sure we have adequate supply for the build out of the city of Longmont. So anyway, the big picture is you guys did a good job on it. It just raises some questions that I know are going to have to be answered. And I just want to give a little bit of feedback on a few of the items I think really need to be kind of focused on as we try to answer that question. So anyway.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point, Todd, and I appreciate that, because we can continue. Jason is working on some cost estimates for the pump back pipeline, but we can look at all of that and make sure, maybe even as part of the attainable housing, all of that can be part of that conversation and should be, so we're clear on all of that. So,
right. Awesome. Okay. Any other comments on that item? I don't see any. So it looks like we're on to item 12, items tentatively scheduled for future board meetings, cash in lieu. So we'll officially review that next month. Is that correct, Ken?
Yeah, we probably won't suggest any changes because we're taking the cash in lieu resolution on the 8th. So
okay,
I doubt we'll change it 1 week later, but we we'll certainly still want to provide you any additional new information we have, especially CBT.
That sounds good. And then we have also in March, we're going to have the Water Board annual report. Is that right? Okay. And then any other, it says discuss future Water Board agendas, any items that any board members have for consideration on a future agenda. And I'm not seeing any. So with that, unless anybody else has anything for the good of the order, Roger? You're muted, Roger.
Sorry about that. Anyway, just to echo your comments, Ken, I thought you did a good job on that study session. Very thorough, and I thought it was well understood. Now, I want to, Marcia, your comments were helpful too. I appreciated those. So I'm glad it went the way it did. That's all I got.
Great. Thank you. Anything else for the good of the order here? I am not seeing any. So with that, I am going to adjourn the Water Board meeting. Thank you all.